Ben, welcome back to Full Story.
Hi, Noah.
Last year, your investigation, Broken Trust, revealed serious failures in several domestic violence-linked deaths. They weren't properly investigated by police or were overlooked by coroners. You've published some more stories in that series this week. Why did you turn your investigation towards cases involving children?
I think principally because these are cases where you are dealing with the most vulnerable victims, but also cases where we found people don't necessarily have advocates after they have died. In a lot of cases, your parents, guardians are either accused, suspected, or ultimately convicted of the homicides of these children. But what happens in the cases of children is that more often than not, we don't see necessarily the same degree of advocacy for them. And there are things that we found out about these cases that were convenient in many ways to stay hidden. But that I think that there's a broader public duty to bring them out so we know the full story around what happened in these cases.
Okay, Ben, in one of those cases, we'll go back 10 years. Can you tell me about Queensland toddler Mason Jett Lee and what happened to him in 2016?
Yeah, Mason was 22 months old when he died, and he was punched in the stomach so hard that it ruptured his intestine by his stepfather, William Andrew O'Sullivan. O'Sullivan was a violent man, a controlling man, someone with a long history of criminal offences, of coercive controlling behaviour. His partner, Anne Marie Lee, was Mason's mother. And subsequent to Mason's death, there was a lot of public outcry, and both O'Sullivan and Mason's mother, Anne Marie, were ultimately convicted of manslaughter. This is a very, very high-profile case in Queensland, and it really showed significant failures and issues with the child protection system here. And it would be, if not the most investigated and reviewed death in the history of Queensland, it would be extremely close. There have been so many departmental reviews and, you know, broad whole of public service reviews, criminal investigations and inquests. This is something that as a kind of a state we have pored over for 10 years, what happened to Mason and what went wrong in this case.
And so, as you've mentioned, his death was the subject of a coronial inquest, but your investigation has found police failures. Can you step us through what you've uncovered?
Yeah, so, I mean, the inquest, the public debate, a lot of the fallout fundamentally focused on the failures of child safety officers. And those were many. And there were individual child safety officers who were working in a system itself that was very sick and that was incapable itself of acting to protect Mason prior to his death. The inquest also made no adverse findings about the actions of police. But what we've uncovered through this investigation was that there was a very significant piece of involvement by police about 9 months prior to Mason's death. A woman contacted police. A woman came forward with accusations about William Andrew O'Sullivan, who would go on to kill Mason, that he had kidnapped a child, that he was suicidal, that he had threatened to kill the child who was in his care at the time. And when police took this report, the officer, without any real clear justification or reasoning, wrote that the woman's call was vexatious and placed a flag on the file saying that all future concerns or requests for child welfare checks should be referred to child safety. So when the woman called again, when she called an interstate police service and attempted to get help subsequent times, because the flag was on the file, police took no action.
That information never made it into the inquest. Why?
Well, the coroner's court had that information. And as the inquest was preparing to hold hearings, coroner made a decision to exclude it. Now, we don't know why. We actually don't have a clear explanation from the coroner's court as to why that information was not included in the inquest, but it wasn't. And so lawyers who were representing other parties, including child safety workers at that inquest, didn't even know about that information until we contacted them in recent weeks and said, you know, you were involved in this inquest. You had access to all of the inquest evidence, and they had never heard this piece of information. I think the question as to why is something that the coroner's court probably needs to answer. The court itself says that the coroners don't comment on findings, and that's obviously quite a proper process, that a coroner might make a finding and then not make an ongoing commentary on it. But we're asking a question here about process, about why something that appears to be very relevant, appears to be a very clear missed opportunity for authorities to intervene with regard to a man who later killed a child, but that somehow was not considered relevant for the inquest. I mean, there are a huge number of questions that remain about why that information wasn't included. And it's something that the public, despite us having pored over and over and over this case, does not know and has never known.
Okay, so the police flag his file and label the complaint as vexatious. Ben, you've also looked through the coroner's report, which made no adverse findings against any member of the Queensland Police Service in its conclusion. But you've looked through the report very closely. What stood out to you?
I mean, there are obvious issues with the Queensland Police Service response that were looked at by the coroner. There was an incident about 2 months before Mason died where a police officer and a child safety officer interviewed one of Mason's siblings. That child disclosed that they were worried about Mason getting hit or punched by a bad guy. Another of Mason's siblings said they were worried about him getting hit if he cried, and so that they tried to look after him. And the response from both the child safety officer and the police officer was simply ignore what the children were saying and move on to the next question. It doesn't really tally with the ultimate conclusion of the coroner that there be no adverse findings about the action of the police. And I think one of the things that perhaps is relevant when talking about this is to understand the extent to which child safety and child safety officers were subjected to intense scrutiny during this process. They were subject to disciplinary action. There were calls for their sacking. Their actions were scrutinized to the point of whether they dotted I's and crossed T's. And for someone involved in that process, and look, I think it's very important to acknowledge that there were failures by child safety and by individual child safety officers here. Certainly not suggesting that that's not the case. Mm-hmm. But you can understand the unfairness that they must feel working in a system that itself was buckling at the time that Mason died, for their actions to be so heavily scrutinized, but for whatever reason, the actions of police to be protected.
Ben, I thought it was interesting. One of the people you spoke to, a lawyer, said, and I quote, "I don't mean to be disrespectful, but did the coroner ignore police inaction to go after the low-hanging fruit, the social workers?" It's been 10 years, a decade, since Mason was killed. There have been many reviews and inquiries more broadly into the Queensland Police Service over that time. Does behaviour like this match up to what came out in those broader reports?
Yeah, absolutely it does. But I think one thing we need to make very clear here is that the officer who acted to flag that file as vexatious, on some level, was following Queensland Police Service policy and procedure, a policy and procedure that has not changed or been reviewed in the decade since that occurred. So under the Queensland Police Operational Procedures Manual, officers are instructed when they're asked to conduct a welfare check on a child that they should assess any motive or advantage that a notifier may receive. Now, fundamentally, what that asks a police officer to do when someone raises a concern about a child is to scrutinise the person making the complaint. And this plays into a trope that was investigated by the 2022 inquiry into the Queensland Police Service. That inquiry noted that there is a perception within the police and by police officers that people make false complaints. And by people, I largely mean women. Now, we know from that inquiry that there are issues of racism, sexism, and misogyny within the Queensland Police Service. And subsequent to that inquiry, on some levels, the state has gone backwards. Now, the Queensland Police Service absolutely says that they are reforming the culture, that they're making changes, but that if you look at the key recommendations of that inquiry, which was to have an independent police integrity unit to handle complaints. Well, not only has that not happened, but the head of the Crime and Corruption Commission in Queensland told a parliamentary inquiry only 2 weeks ago that things had gotten worse in terms of the internal handling of complaints. Now, the fact that the mechanism that allowed this to happen is still to this day within Queensland police policy is something that should be very concerning. And I think it raises the question as to why this wasn't something that has been scrutinised through the many reviews and the inquest. Because that policy itself, I think we can show here through this reporting, is something that would have been, or there would have been some pressure on police to change it had we known the impact of the decision that was made by this officer.
We'll be right back.
Full Story is supported by EY Parthenon. EY Parthenon is the global strategy consulting practice of EY, working with CEOs, boards, investors, and governments on their most critical decisions. They bring deep sector expertise, an investor mindset, and advanced technology to bring clarity to complex challenges. EY Parthenon helps leaders make better decisions in moments of change, anticipating what's next, finding opportunity in uncertainty, and translating complex shifts into real-world outcomes, turning insight into action. For more insights, go to ey.com/au/Parthenon. EY Parthenon, transformative strategy and transactions. Solutions that work in practice, not just on paper.